welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Tuesday, December 22nd. I'm your reader, Jim Hill. Well, first, let's have a look at the weather for eastern Iowa in the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area for today. It'll be partly cloudy, wind from the south southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 42 and a low of 31. Tomorrow, Wednesday, a chance of rain and snow, and it'll be windy. A high of 44 and a low of 6. On Thursday, it will be cold with scattered flurries. We'll have a high of 14 and a low of 3. And then on Friday, mostly sunny with a high of 23 and a low of 15. The normal high for this day is 31, the normal low 16. The record high was 59 in 1933. And the record low was minus 19 degrees in 1989. The sun will set tonight at 4:39. It will rise tomorrow at 7:32. We have a little weather story today, this one from meteorologist Corey Thompson. Can we hold on to snow for Christmas? One of the more romantic ideas tied to a holiday is that of a snow-covered landscape during Christmas time. Whether we will have that is easily one of the more common questions we get in the KCRG TV9 Weather Lab in December. This year, it may be a stretch. Whatever leftover snow we have on the ground will be fighting against mild temperatures and some rain, possible on Wednesday. That storm system could switch to a little snow on the cold side, but additional accumulations at this point look light for Cedar Rapids. No matter what, we'll be well short of our record deepest snow cover for Christmas, set at 14 inches in 2010. And again, that little weather story is from meteorologist Corey Thompson. Now let's turn to the front page of the Gazette for our first story, and this one is headlined, "Demand for Free Diapers Soars This Year. Diaper Bank Seeks Donations Over Holiday Season." And the story is by Michaela Ram of the Gazette. Because of the economic hardship faced by many this year, one local nonprofit providing for some of the area's littlest residents saw its biggest growth to date. The Eastern Iowa Diaper Bank has donated more than 615,000 diapers to local families in need in the past year, roughly six times its previous donations record. I don't think any of us would have guessed that we would have been able to do it through 2020, and the only reason we've been able to do it is because of community support, said Aaron Langdon, Chief Development Officer at Eastern Iowa Health Center and organizer of the Diaper Bank. Langdon estimated the bank donated about 150,000 diapers last year. The organization was created through a partnership with YPN, the Young Family Support Network, and the Eastern Iowa Health Center, the Cedar Rapids-based federally qualified health center. The organization was started to aid some of the lowest-income families in the community. Families, officials estimate, can spend up to 14% of their paycheck on diapers alone. Clients with either of those organizations could enroll in the program to earn free diapers for their babies and toddlers throughout the year by completing well-check visits, finishing a YPN program, or participating in other services offered by these nonprofits. For the first time this year, the Diaper Bank did not limit its donations to program participants and opened its doors to any member of the community in need, thus hugely increasing the client base. Quote, "We saw the need was out there, and we saw the community was willing to help," said Alejandro Pino, YPN Executive Director and Diaper Bank Organizer. Some other not-for-profits have struggled this year as fewer people donated. But Pino said, "This effort has been really fortunate to have seen an increase in new donors, helping it meet the increase in need." Organizers opted to open the bank up to community members in March, when the coronavirus pandemic first reached Iowa, and the beginning of the economic downturn was starting to affect thousands in eastern Iowa. They opened a drive-through at its downtown Cedar Rapids location. Langdon said organizers were planning to return to its client-only model by the end of the summer. But then the August 10th derecho hit. Langdon said, quote, "It's been really interesting to see who's come through the bank. We've seen all walks of life. We see typical participants who are struggling, but also people who've been furloughed or have lost their jobs due to the pandemic. And this is a really essential need for every baby and toddler." Langdon said the diaper bank will be returning to its participation model at the beginning of the year to maintain its long-term sustainability. Until the end of this month, the bank needs more donations to meet the need over the holidays and period. Currently, the biggest needs are size 5 and 6 diapers and pull-ups. People can donate to the diaper bank through its Amazon wish list page or through its website at Eastern Iowa, diaperbank.org. The diaper bank's yearly donations have grown exponentially since its inception in 2016, an indication that the need has always been there. The economic hardship brought on to many by the pandemic and the derecho simply enhanced that need. Langdon said, quote, "I never thought this pet project we started in 2016 would be to this magnitude." Pino said organizers expect more clients will enroll in the program through YPN or the Eastern Iowa Health Center and hope their new donors will return in the upcoming year. Langdon said, quote, "We continue to adapt our program over the years, and this year will be no different. We just look forward to being able to continue to meet the needs and grow as we move forward out of the pandemic, but realizing the needs for children and families don't go away." Now we have this story from the front page of the Gazette. Pining for a last-minute Christmas tree? Tree farms mostly out. Garden centers have some. And this story is by Gage Miskimen of the Gazette. With only a few days left until the holiday, the vast majority of the area's tree farms have sold out of Christmas trees and are closed for the season. But garden centers still have some for last-minute shoppers. Dan Hoffman, who, with his wife Deb, owns Hoffman Tree Farms in Marion, said the business sold most of its trees in just the first 3 days of the season. He said, quote, "We opened Black Friday and that weekend had good weather. There's just not enough Christmas tree farms around Cedar Rapids." Just west in Benton County, the Casino Farms, located in Vinton, had its best year ever for tree sales, according to business manager Elise Lynch. Lynch said, quote, "We sold out a couple of weekends ago. We sold more than 400 trees this year. We had a couple that drove an hour and a half to come to our farm." The pause. Janelle Brem, nursery manager at Culver's Garden Center and Greenhouse in Marion, Garden Center and Greenhouse in Marion, said as of Monday morning, the center had 10 live Christmas trees left. Brem said, quote, we got 194 trees this year. Some people got into the holiday season early because of COVID. Plus, the nice weather earlier this season helped with sales, too. Even if people can't have get-togethers, people still want to decorate and celebrate. Earl May Garden Center, which has two locations in Cedar Rapids, had some Christmas trees available as well. Shell Youngblood, assistant manager of the North location at 5155 Northland Avenue Northeast, said the store had about 50 of its green-cut trees left. It had 250 trees at the start of the season. She said, quote, "We saw quite a few people before Thanksgiving. I think people were worried that trees were going to be gone. She added she thinks tree sales are down there due to the effects of this year's calamities. She said, quote, people are trying to put food on the table. We've sold quite a bit of smaller greenery versus the trees. I think people are thinking to go a little smaller due to not having people over for Christmas. So they're sprucing things up with the smaller greenery. Youngblood's daughter, Heather, is the store manager at the South Store location at 1200 Edgewood Road, Southwest. Heather Youngblood said the South location had only about 25 trees left as of Monday morning. The store started with 143 trees at the beginning of the season. She said, quote, there aren't a ton of people that come out this close to Christmas, but it's also not that uncommon. She added that the South location also has sold smaller garland this year, but that tends to go as fast as the trees. She said, quote, you have to come early to get the best pick of the litter. And we have this story on this pandemic-related story. UIHC, that's the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, expects hundreds of Moderna vaccine doses. Over 1,100 employees have been vaccinated so far. And this little story is by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette. The University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, which last week became the first place in Iowa to start inoculating its workers with the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, expects its first shipment of about 1,500 doses of the Moderna brand of the vaccine this week, possibly today. As of Monday, 1,143 frontline University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics employees working directly with patients, including those with COVID-19, had received a first dose of the Pfizer vaccine, which arrived December 14th. There have been no severe reactions, according to UIHC spokeswoman Jennifer Brown, who confirmed Pfizer vaccinations will continue this week and scheduling will begin for workers to get a second required shot later, needed to assure 95% efficacy. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration on December 11th approved emergency use of Pfizer's vaccine, and it granted the same approval of Moderna's on Friday. UIHC is receiving its vaccine allocations from Johnson County Public Health for employees only at this time, in alignment with guidance from the Iowa Department of Public Health and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. University of Iowa leaders have told reporters they would like to be involved in vaccinating the broader community, but have not been given doses or clearance to vaccinate anyone other than our healthcare employees. The State Public Health Department last week reported a revised vaccine allocation from the CDC. In addition to the 26,000 Pfizer doses last week, Iowa is expecting 19,500 Pfizer doses and 53,800 Moderna doses this week, and 19,500 Pfizer doses and 19,500 Moderna doses the week after. That amounts to 138,300 doses by about the end of the month, about 20% fewer than what the state initially said it expected. quote, we will continue to provide the weekly allocation numbers and will give updates if those change, according to a public health spokesperson. We will also be able to provide a total number of individuals who have been vaccinated on a weekly basis. The state said Public Health Department Interim Director Kelly Garcia will give an update on Iowa's vaccine strategy and progress during a governor's news conference at 11 a.m. today. As vaccine supplies are limited right now, UIHC has broken its 18,000 some employees into four groups for vaccine prioritization, starting with 1,500 to 2,000 physicians, mid-level providers, nurses, therapists, housekeepers, and others involved in direct patient care. The second group includes workers supporting patient care on the main campus, and the third covers employees supporting patient care at off-site locations and clinics. The fourth and final group includes all other UIHC staff, although several top administrators received the vaccine last week to demonstrate to the public their confidence in its safety. Even as UIHC expects to soon be providing both Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, recipients won't get to choose between the two, which are similar but have differences. The Moderna vaccine's two doses must be administered 4 weeks apart, while Pfizer's happen 3 weeks apart. Pfizer's vaccine must be stored at 94 degrees below Fahrenheit, below zero, I guess, while Moderna's doesn't require much extreme conditions. It can be shipped at 4 degrees below and stored for 30 days at 36 to 46 degrees. Both are messenger RNA vaccines, meaning essentially they deliver instructions that bodies use to manufacture spike proteins and display them to the immune system in a way that looks like an actual infection, according to a summary from the UIHC. The immune system then responds and creates antibodies and other immune cells that recognize the spike protein. According to UIHC, which has been working to dispel myths about the vaccines, I should read that again so it comes out right. The immune system then responds and creates antibodies and other immune cells that recognize the spike protein. This according to UIHC, which has been working to dispel myths about the vaccines. Quote, the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines cannot give you COVID, according to the university. These vaccines do not contain the virus. Another UIHC mythbuster notes messenger RNA vaccines can't alter a person's DNA or genetic code. According to UIHC, they do not insert themselves in the genome, which is made of DNA. Although healthcare and public health experts have warned about holiday gatherings and a possible spike in COVID-19 cases, Iowa has seen a notable decline in new daily cases recently, reporting 601 on Monday, compared with daily additions in the 4,000s and even 5,000s in November. UIHC, which at one point last month had about 100 COVID-19 inpatients, now reports just 28. Here's a little story from the Iowa Today page. Commuters take heed. Traffic changes coming to I-80, I-380 interchange. And this story is by Lee Hermiston of the Gazette. Significant traffic changes of the Interstate 80, Interstate 380 interchange are anticipated this week as part of the years-long project of redesigning the junction. The Iowa Department of Transportation said eastbound I-80 to northbound I-380 traffic will be moved soon to a new flyover ramp. Northbound Highway 218 traffic also will be shifted to new pavement in the median throughout the interchange, the Iowa DOT announced. Earlier this month, a new I-80 eastbound to Highway 218 southbound exit was opened. The changes will come with some effects on traffic, the Iowa DOT said. One of them, I-80 westbound to I-380 northbound is expected to be closed from 8 p.m. Monday to 6 a.m. today. Traffic will be detoured to Coral Ridge Avenue and Forever Green Road. Another change, the I-80 eastbound to the I-380 northbound ramp will be closed starting at 7 p.m. Monday for up to 3 days. Traffic will be detoured to Coral Ridge Avenue and Forever Green Road. Another change, the northbound Highway 218 will be reduced to a single lane until the reconstruction of northbound I-380 is complete. And another change, Highway 218 to the I-80 westbound loop ramp will be closed permanently. Traffic will be detoured to Forever Green Road. Entire interchange project is tentatively scheduled to continue through 2024. And now we'll turn to the insight page of the Gazette, where have community letters. Today there are 4 letters. Actually, 3. The first is from John Carver of Decorah. Christopher Krebs pays the price for being honest. Christopher Krebs, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security official who spearheaded a campaign to counter rumors about voter fraud, has been fired by President Donald Trump. Krebs' firing came after his agency, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, released a statement calling the 2020 election, the most secure in American history. CBS 60 Minutes has featured a segment on this subject. Mr. Krebs gave an enlightening delivery of this committee's work. Now the stunner. No one, including the media, has enlisted the fact that neither Russia, China, or any other invasive country hacked into our election. Mr. Krebs, who was hired by Trump and his committee, were totally successful in keeping these warlords out of our democracy. No wonder Trump fired him. This is a sad story of someone doing an honest job and having to pay the ultimate price for being honest. Thank goodness a new day dawns. And again, this letter is from John Carver of Decorah. The second letter is from Stephen Pokorny of Urbandale. Senator Ernst needs to tend to her own house. Senator Joni Ernst's recent emailed letter is regarding congressional involvement in securing election security. She states, quote, "The right of individual states to administer the election process must be protected." And I agree. Ernst goes on to assert that Congress can and must play a supporting role to ensure that these elections remain free and fair. Well, for starters, how about the senator telling that to her 100-plus Trump's compatriots in the House of Representatives who have engaged in every conceivable maneuver to subvert what, by all accounts, has been the freest and fairest election in American history? Ernst needs to look to clean up the subversive politics of her own party before announcing that she favors congressional involvement in protecting the election process that each state chooses and maintains for itself. Ernst and her party are in no position to provide advice or guidance. And again, that letter is from Stephen Pokorny of Urbandale. Our last letter is from Cynthia Valenta, or Valenta, of Cedar Rapids. Remember our veterans this holiday season. While we cannot gather together in person this year, the Military Mama Network, Facebook, While we cannot gather together in person this year, the Military Mama Network Facebook group will not be stopped from fulfilling our mission to support our troops, veterans, and their families, especially in moments when you wish your mama could be there. This year, we are virtually facilitating Mission ELF to help military families. Strangers across the state have come together in our Facebook group to be matched with military families in need, with those wanting to donate food, clothing, and toys. Though the pandemic has prevented us from meeting in person, we built a community through our Facebook group that has created friendships and grown our impact. Members of the military and their families do a great service to our country. They defend our freedoms with little reward and don't ask for anything back. It's important to show our care and respect for them because their families sacrifice as much as the soldier. While we can't come together in person this year, military members and their families still are depending on a holiday season to celebrate, whether it's through the Military Mama Network Facebook group or otherwise, please find a way to give back to those who have given so much. And again, that letter is from Cynthia Valenta of Cedar Rapids. We
have this also from the inside page. We have this guest column from Imam Hassan Selim, who leads the Islamic Center of Cedar Rapids and is a member of the Interreligious Council of Linn County. Hope and light in the midst of darkness. As I sit to write this article in my office, vaccines for COVID-19 are being distributed to hospitals across the nation. I can't help but feel hopeful and grateful. To some, both sentiments, hopefulness and gratefulness, can occur naturally within us. But to many, this isn't the case. It takes work and striving to reach a mental, emotional, and spiritual state of gratitude and aspiration. As a man of faith, I consider religious narratives to serve the sole purpose of reminding us constantly of the value and virtue of hanging on to hope and to resort to gratitude at all times. Throughout this year, we have faced some of the greatest challenges in the modern age: a pandemic, economic losses, loss of loved ones, isolation, social injustice, racial discrimination, a historically destructive storm, and unprecedented political polarization. You may be shocked or surprised when I tell you that as a Muslim in this past year, I found myself going back to the stories of Jesus and Moses in the Quran to nourish my soul, to remind myself that there is hope and light in the midst of all the darkness and confusion we are all going through right now. I have served as an imam to the Muslim community here in Cedar Rapids for the past 8 years or so, and one of the things I will always appreciate about this city is its people. The unreal sense of home, welcoming, and generosity of the people of Cedar Rapids is something that you can't help but note, whether in grocery stores, from your neighbors, or simply passing by people on sidewalks. This kindness is something I have observed and continue to on a daily basis in countless interactions. This warmness is what makes the cold winters of Iowa so charming to me, however much I hate shoveling snow. The Quran celebrates both Jesus and Mary as reminders of compassion, mercy, and faith. Jesus is described in the Quran as the Spirit of God. That is because his life exemplified and reflected God's true essence, mercy and compassion to all. Many may not know that Mary, mother of Jesus, has a chapter named after her in the Quran, and that she is an example of resilience and faith to all Muslims. The Quran also teaches us that the courage and faith of Moses in facing the tyranny of the Pharaoh and delivering the Israelites from oppression is a living reminder to all of us to speak and stand up for the oppressed. Moses' story is the most repeated narrative in the Quran. As Muslims, we may hold different theological views on the nature of Jesus, but what we have in common with our Christian brothers and sisters is more than enough to form a common ground of neighborly love and mutual respect and appreciation. Islam teaches its adherents to go above and beyond its final commonalities with all people, but especially people of the book, Jews and Christians. Both communities are seen within the Islamic tradition as recipients of divine revelations in the form of the Torah and the Gospel. For so many years, extremism, misinformation, and ill intentions have all kept us busy trying to defend the honor of our faith, correct misconceptions, and reclaim its spirit of peace. The pandemic may have been the single greatest challenge to humanity in our time, but the blessings often are hidden in the midst of trials. This challenge has shown us that we are all one and the same in facing this episode of terror. We are all vulnerable. We are all impacted. The pandemic spared no one, neither did the derecho, and as such, together we will have to work together to make it through and to rebuild our communities, Jews, Christians, Muslims, and all. For now, let us pause. Let us take time to appreciate our blessings and be grateful for them. Let us be inspired and hopeful for our Jewish, for our Jewish neighbors, your Muslim neighbors, friends and family. Wish you a happy Hanukkah. For our Christian neighbors, family and friends, we wish you a blessed Christmas. We share faith. We share hope. We are grateful for you. May the lights of your menorahs and Christmas trees guide our way forward. And again, that is a guest column from Imam Hassan Salim, who leads the Islamic Center of Cedar Rapids and is a member of the Interreligious Council of Linn County. You're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Tuesday, December 22nd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now let's turn to today's obituaries. First, we have the short notices from Belle Plaine. Dorothy Becker, 89, died Sunday, December 20th. The Raybank Newhouse Funeral Service of Belle Plaine is handling the arrangements. From Decorah, Vernon Spilde, that's spelled S-P-I-L-D-E, 94, died Sunday, December 20th. The Sholter Balick Funeral Home of Decorah is handling the arrangements. From Dyersville, Hugo L. Engelkin, 92, of Dyersville, formerly of Petersburg, died Saturday, December 19th. The Kramer Funeral Home of Dyersville is handling the arrangements. From Independence, Richard E. Engen, 83, died Thursday, December 17th. The White Funeral Home of Independence is handling the arrangements. From Maquoketa, Robert F., also known as Bob Larkey, 76, died Friday, December 18th. The Carson Celebration of Life Center of Maquoketa is handling the arrangements. From Marquette, Richard Milton Russell, 67, died Saturday, December 19th. The Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Services of McGregor is in charge of arrangements. From Rowley, Guy J. Williamson, 75, died Saturday, December 19th. The Reef Family Center of Independence is handling the arrangements. From Vinton, Donald R. Erickson, 89, died Monday, December 21st. The Van Steenhuis Russell Funeral Home of Vinton is handling the arrangements. From Wellman, Burdine Beckler, 95, died Saturday, December 19th. Arrangements are with the Powell Funeral Home of Wellman. Now we'll drop down the page to the longer notices. From Cedar Rapids, Don Willis White, 79, of Cedar Rapids, passed away December 18th at Mercy Medical Center. Private family services will be held Tuesday, December 22nd at Fred Riegel Funeral Home in Ziering, Iowa. Burial will be at Lincoln Township Cemetery in Ziering. From Belle Plaine, Dewey H. Wheeler. From Belle Plaine, Dewey H. Wheeler died peacefully at his home, surrounded by his loving family, on Sunday, December 20th. He was 79 years of age. Online condolences may be left at www.iowacremation.com under obituaries. From Cedar Rapids, Theodore, also known as Ted, also known as Butch Bean Jr., 81, of Cedar Rapids, died Sunday, December 20th, at Northbrook Manor Care from complications of COVID. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, December 26th, at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. Burial will follow at Linwood Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. From Stanwood, Doris Janet, Doris Janet Tenley, 88, of Stanwood, died December 18th in the comfort of her home with her family at her side. The funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, December 22nd, at Fry Funeral Home. Burial will follow in the Stanwood Cemetery. From Cedar Rapids, Jeanette May Madsen passed away peacefully at her care facility in Ramsey, Minnesota, on December 8th, with two of her daughters at her side. Due to COVID-19, a service to commemorate and celebrate Jeanette's life is planned to be held in the future at First Presbyterian Church in Mount Vernon, Iowa. Details will be announced in the obituary section of the Gazette once they are able to be finalized. From DeWitt, Raymond Meyer, 84, died peacefully Saturday, December 19th, at West Wing Place in DeWitt, with his family by his side. Due to COVID-19, services will be held at a later date. The Goetsch Funeral Home in Monticello has taken Ray and his family into their care. From Cedar Rapids, Geraldine May, also known as Jerry Pulver Heron, that's spelled H-A-R-E-N, 79, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Saturday, December 19th, at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, December 29th, at Murdoch Glenwood Funeral Home, which is at 520 Wilson Avenue, Southwest in Cedar Rapids. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, December 28th, at the funeral home, with additional from 10 a.m. to service time Tuesday. Graveside committal services will be at 3 p.m. Tuesday, December 29th, in Evergreen Cemetery in Delhi, Iowa. From New Vienna, Lawrence A. Lansing, 85, of New Vienna, passed away Saturday, December 19th, at his farm in New Vienna. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, December 22nd, at Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue, Southwest in Dyersville. Visitation will continue from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Wednesday at St. Boniface Catholic Church in New Vienna before services. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, December 23rd, at the church, with burial in the church cemetery. The Reverend Dennis Quint will officiate. From Schulzburg, James Leo, also known as Jimbo Schultzman, 82, passed away peacefully on Saturday, December 12th, at home in Schulzburg, surrounded by loved ones. Visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to noon Friday, February 12th, at Oak Grove Christian Church in Schulzburg. A celebration of life service will be held at noon at the church, with Pastor Matt McGee officiating. From Garnavillo, on December 20th, Joan, also known as Joni Clark, passed away. Joni was always very considerate of the needs and welfare of others, and during these times, it was her wish that there be no services. Cards of condolence may be directed to Greg Clark, 26776 Great River Road in Garnavillo, Iowa, 52049. From Marion, Michelle E. Gaffney, 59, of Marion, died Saturday, December 19th, at her home. A memorial mass of Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, December 23rd, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Winthrop. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday at Fawcett Schmidt's Funeral Home in Winthrop. Interment will be at the St. Patrick's Catholic Cemetery in Winthrop. From Mechanicsville, Gerald, also known as Jerry Owen Hankemeyer, 75, of Mechanicsville, passed away December 18th at Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Visitation will be from 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, December 27th, at Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services in Mount Vernon. Face masks and social distancing will be required by everyone in attendance. A private family service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 28th. Friends and extended family are invited to watch the service via live stream. Please find the live stream link on Jerry's tribute wall and share your support and memories with his family at www.stuartbaxter.com under obituaries. Following the service, Jerry will be laid to rest at Rose Hill Cemetery in Mechanicsville. A celebration of life will be held in the summer of 2021 when it is safe to do so. From Independence, Joanne Schminke, 79 of Independence, formerly of Cedar Rapids, died Thursday, December 17th. Services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 23rd, at Cornerstone Four Square Church in Independence. From Kelowna, Anna M. Miller Pfeiffer, 86, of Kelowna, died Monday, December 21st, at Pleasantville in, at Pleasant View in Kelowna. A celebration of life will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, December 23rd, at Kelowna Mennonite Church. The service will be available via live stream on the B.D. Petersheim Facebook page. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, December 22nd, at the church. From Marion, Janet Drago Obando, 68, died December 16th while at home with her family at her side. She was greatly loved by her family and friends. There will be a small family service in honor of Janet, and in lieu of flowers, donations can be sent to Iowa Yucatan Partners of the Americas, care of William Edwards, 2232 170th Street in Boone, Iowa, 50036. From Monticello, Dwayne L. Bolwitt, 78, of Monticello, passed away Saturday, December 19th, at Monticello Nursing and Rehab Center after a lengthy struggle from the results of a stroke. Public graveside services will be held at 4 p.m. Wednesday, December 23rd, at Monticello Sacred Heart Cemetery. Masks are mandatory for attendance and social distancing. From Springville, Margaret Thing, that's spelled T-H-I-N-G, 84, died Sunday, December 20th, at the Gardens of Cedar Rapids from complications of COVID. Private family services will be held Saturday, December 26th, at the Goach Funeral Home in Monticello, with interment in the Hopkinton Cemetery. The services will be live-streamed on the Goach Funeral Home Facebook page. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Springville Fire and Rescue, Springville United Methodist Church, or COVID Relief. And finally, from West Liberty, Robert G. Miller, 84, of West Liberty, and a former longtime resident of Ottumwa, died peacefully at 12:30 p.m. Sunday, December 20th, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. Due to the pandemic, there will be no public visitation or service. The family will hold a private service later. The Henderson Barker Funeral Home in West Liberty is caring for Bob's family. Online condolences may be made to the family at www.hendersonbarkerfuneralhome.com. From the sports page today, there is little way of high school sports stories. We have this one story here on girls basketball by Jeff Linder. Washington defeats Marion. Hannah Stilke has a vast toolbox. She can score, she can rebound, she can defend and run the floor, and she can pass. Quote, it's probably her most underrated skill, Cedar Rapids, Washington girls basketball coach Chris James said. We have more playmakers around her this year than can score, so you see it more often now. The most important thing is she's a willing passer. Stilke dished out 6 assists to accompany 17 points and 10 rebounds last night, and the Class 5A 12th-ranked Warriors were able to grind out a 64-47 non-conference home conquest of Marion. Quote, I try to get the other girls the ball, said Stilke, a 6'2" junior and a University of Iowa commit. They're good shooters, and they all contribute. The Warriors, at 4-0, entered the game as the state's highest-scoring team in any class. This was their lowest-scoring night thus far this season, but they were able to steadily pull away in the second half. James said, quote, I looked at the scoreboard at halftime, and we were up 30-25. It didn't feel like it. It felt like they were outplaying us. We didn't have that offensive avalanche tonight. We've got to find other ways to win, and tonight was one of those nights. Sidney Midvalsky led the Warriors with 22 points and also posted six rebounds and four steals. Backup post Deja Redmond was extremely productive in her time on the floor, accumulating 9 points and eight rebounds. I love playing with Deja, Stolke said. She's a great counterpart to me. She's a really good rebounder. Marion, at 2-4, scored the game's first 6 points and led 17-12 after a quarter behind Sadie Struchan's three-pointers. Stokey's three-point play gave the Warriors their first lead, 22-20. Then her steal and basket ignited a 6-0 run for a 28-22 advantage, and Washington led the rest of the way. Struchan and Ella Van Wilden scored 14 points apiece to pace Marion. And now I'll turn to the back page of the Gazette for the Dear Abby column. Dear Abby, I raised my kids right as a single mom. I took pride in supporting them and giving them what they needed and wanted. I have a daughter who lives out of town with her husband and children. I don't get to see them often, so I love buying them gifts that are waiting for them when they get here. For the kids' birthdays and holidays, I always have nice gifts for them, too. For the past few years, my daughter has refused to take any of the gifts home with her, so the toys sit in my spare rooms. She smirks and laughs when someone says something about leaving behind the gifts I buy. She and her husband stay at my house when they visit, so the kids play with their toys then. I'm hurt by her lack of appreciation and have decided to stop buying anything for the kids on holidays or birthdays. I want to see the kids' faces when they open a present and play with it. Would it be wrong for me to just stop buying gifts? And this letter is signed Generous Granny in Ohio. Dear Generous Granny, this is something you should discuss with your daughter. Could it be that your grandchildren have so many toys at home that there isn't room for more? I'm not sure why your daughter would smirk and laugh when someone mentions the gifts left behind when your family leaves, but I don't think children should be punished for something that parent does. To deny them gifts on birthdays and Christmas because of it would be petulant and a mistake. And that is the Dear Abby column. And now I'll just turn to the weather page for a little recap of the eastern Iowa weather. Today, it'll be partly cloudy. The wind from the southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 42 and a low of 31. On Wednesday, a chance of rain and snow. It'll be windy. We'll have a high of 44, a low of 6. On Thursday, it'll be cold with scattered flurries. We'll have a high of 14 and a low of 3. On Friday, mostly sunny, a high of 23 and a low of 15. The normal high for this day is 31, the normal low 16. The sun will set tonight at 4:39. It will rise tomorrow at 7:32. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Tuesday, December 22nd, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. I'm your reader, Jim Hill. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.
This is Tom Hatton with an Irish short take from the book entitled A Culinary History of Iowa. And this article, actually it says chapter 2, is entitled Immigrants Influence Iowa's Food Traditions. Hundreds of thousands of pioneers and immigrants from many parts of Europe and beyond flocked to Iowa in the 19th and early 20th centuries in search of a better life, whether that meant economic opportunity, religious freedom, or the chance to create a utopian society. These newcomers brought a variety of unique food traditions with them and transformed Iowa's culinary history. Some immigrants, like the French Icarians, were motivated by ideological ideals when they settled in America. The new state of Iowa, specifically Adams County, became the promised land for French men and women pursuing their dream to create a communal utopian society where everyone was equal. By some accounts, their Icaria colony in southwest Iowa was the longest existing non-religious, purely communal experiment in American history. The first Icarian party arrived in Iowa in 1852. They purchased about 3,000 acres of land from the United States government at $1.25 per acre to build their new colony near Corning. Living conditions in the untamed lands of southwest Iowa were often harsh. Log houses, some without wood floors or windows, were the French settlers' only shelter against the brutal winter. Most of the Icarians' land was unfenced, unbroken prairie, and there was not one settler along the trail before they reached Icaria, according to some reports. Supplies for the colony often had to be hauled overland for hundreds of miles. Only a few basic ingredients, including milk, butter, cornbread, and bacon, formed the daily menu. As a communal society, the Icarians worked together on the farms and ate together in a communal dining hall, where evening meals were sometimes followed by music or lectures, spoken in French. Little by little, living conditions in the colony improved as the Icarians managed to establish a fairly successful agricultural enterprise. When wool prices skyrocketed with the outbreak of the Civil War, the Icarians thrived by selling wool and other supplies to the Union Army. While the war ended in 1865, trouble was brewing in the Icaria colony by the 1870s. Much of the conflict revolved around little gardens, according to an April 1921 article in the Iowa History Journal, The Pelham Pest. Earlier in the history of the Icarian community in Iowa, each family had been permitted to cultivate a little garden around their log house where flowers might be raised. Some families had planted vines and even fruit trees. Now that these plants were bearing fruit, the more radical members of the colony could not tolerate this violation of their rules against private property. The possessors of the gardens, however, clung to their little plots of ground. It wasn't much, but it was theirs. The authorities tried to settle the quarrel with a compromise. As each family moved from their log house to a new frame house, their little garden was to be given up. There would be no simple resolution to this dispute, however, which triggered open hostilities. The radicals claimed that the community had violated its constitution and announced their intent to withdraw. They also advocated an aggressive style of communism and appealed to a circuit court to revoke the charter granted to the community in 1860 on the grounds that Icaria was really a communist establishment instead of an agricultural society, as the Articles of Incorporation provided. By 1879, a group of younger progressive colony members had split from the older, more conservative members. This marked the beginning of the end for the Icarians' utopian experiment in Iowa. In 1898, members voted to end the colony. By then, it consisted mostly of elders who could no longer continue the hard work of operating the colony. The Icarian movement in America was over. The legacy of the Icarian movement endures, however. The French Icarian Colony Board of Trustees was formed in recent years and has been rebuilding the French Icarian village on a portion of original Icarian land east of Corning. The 1878 refectory, communal dining hall, and 1860 one-room Icaria school have been restored for tours and research. History comes to life at the French Icarian village through events like the annual Fête de Mai, Festival of Corn, which is held in the fall. The original Fête de Mai was a celebration held by the Icarians each fall after all the crops were harvested. The feast was served in the communal dining hall to everyone who came to help on the final day of corn harvest. In late September 2015, the Cresta News Advertiser promoted the French Icarian Village's 4th annual Fête de Mai, which included a 4-course French supper featuring flavors of the Alsace region. It's a modern taste of the French Icarian's quest for utopia in Iowa. And that was an excerpt from A Culinary History of Iowa by Darcy Doherty Malsey and other offbeat stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Barrett Thorkelson.